Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Hello to you, the listener. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Gail Seiler, your host for today. Well, Thanksgiving is done. Hopefully our listeners enjoyed it, however they celebrated it. And today is what has come to be known as Black Friday. Tomorrow is Small Business Saturday, so support local businesses on Main Street and elsewhere in Ames. Monday is Cyber Monday, which is like Black Friday on steroids, or rather on the internet. And Tuesday is Giving Tuesday, a day when you are encouraged to donate money to nonprofit organizations like KHOI. So if you missed our membership drive that just ended, it is not too late to donate. Why not do it on Giving Tuesday? You can donate online at our website, khoifm.org, or call 515-292-2878, or come by and meet us in person at 410 Douglas and become a member. We'll be talking more about Thanksgiving later in the show, but first, it's Friday, and so it's time for the News Roundup, brought to us all the way from California by Dennis Hart. We missed Dennis last week, but he is with us once again.
Even though it's a holiday week, there's still been plenty of news in and around Ames, as reported on the pages of area newspapers. In Tuesday's Tribune, the big story, of course, was about the city of Ames' first homicide of the year. Ames police were still looking for clues in the Saturday morning shooting and apparent robbery that left 21-year-old Xavier Jordan Shepley of Ames dead. Two men wearing ski masks entered Shepley's first-floor apartment. During the invasion, Shepley, who was a 2014 graduate of Ballard High School, sustained one gunshot wound to his upper torso. After the shooting, which took place at the Fountain View Apartments on Mayfield Drive, south of Mortensen Road and east of South Dakota Avenue, Shepley was rushed to Mary Greeley Medical Center, where he was pronounced dead. Police said witnesses told them that two men wearing ski masks entered the apartment in what appeared to be a robbery. One of the intruders fired a shot from a handgun. The suspects ran off, then drove away at a high rate of speed in what appeared to be a black or blue Chevrolet Avalanche. There were a handful of people at the apartment at the time of the shooting. No one else was hurt. The two suspects were still at large on Tuesday. Police Commander Jeff Huff said it appeared nothing had been taken or stolen during the incident. He said police did not know why the suspects picked that particular apartment or if there was a relationship between the intruders and the victim. It was not clear how long Shepley had been living in the apartment. Huff said authorities have some leads and that they were optimistic they would figure out who was involved. Anyone with information was asked to call Ames Police or Crime Stoppers. The Crime Stoppers number is 515-223-1400. That's 515-223-1400. Also in Tuesday's Trib, big doings at the Ames School District Board meeting Monday night. For starters, the board accepted the voluntary retirement of District Superintendent Tim Taylor. His retirement will go into effect June 30th of next year. Also at that meeting, the board approved a request for $85,000 worth of work for the Edwards Elementary Play Area Improvements Project. The board also heard from two community members who commended the district for recent efforts to address racial disparity and school climate-related issues. One of them called for the district to take another step forward by establishing a new position of equity officer or director. Also in Tuesday's Tribune, word that the Ames City Council chamber was packed Monday afternoon as friends, family, and other members of the community gathered to see new firefighters sworn in and current firefighters honored. It was all part of the 4th Ames Fire Department recognition ceremony. Deputy Fire Chief Rich Higgins said the large turnout shows what firefighters can accomplish with a strong support system. Three new firefighters were sworn in along with a new fire inspector. Four separate fire crews with 16 firefighters were also honored for their role in cardiac arrest saves and a childbirth. As he spoke to the families and other firefighters in the department, Fire Training Officer Josh Bennett passed the torch to the new firefighters, saying in his words, "Now is when we put you to the real test. The opportunity to serve is both a privilege and a reward. How you handle that privilege will determine your worth to the residents and visitors of Ames." Following the completion of the 11-week Fire Academy, Jerome Ward, Lindsay Ball, and Ashley Culp were sworn in as Ames firefighters, and Jason Ziff as the new Ames Fire Inspector. Also in Tuesday's Trib, Iowa Republican Congressman Steve King came to Ames on Monday and told the Chamber of Commerce he's optimistic the U.S. Senate can pass a tax reform bill. King, who represents the state's 4th District, which includes Story and Boone counties, was one of the 227 Republicans who voted yes on the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act a week ago. That House of Representatives bill would drop the corporate tax rate from 35% to 20%, reduce the number of tax brackets from 7 to 4, and get rid of numerous itemized deductions, except for deductions for mortgage interest, property taxes up to $10,000 a year, and charitable deductions. King said the House of Representatives' action made him feel, in his words, lifted up. King said the Senate knows it has to find a way to pass tax reform, a way to get it done. He estimated there's a 75% or better chance the Senate will pass a bill after the Thanksgiving recess. Story County Supervisor Loris Olson, a Democrat, asked King a question about the effect of congressional actions on vulnerable populations. She said the House bill will remove the medical expense deduction, which will affect families who use the rebate to help pay for the care of their elderly and children with special needs. King said the bill's writers decided to offer a higher standard deduction to be able to eliminate several of the individual deductions. He said if everything works out and more people are paying taxes, Congress could look at addressing some of the issues Olson mentioned. In Wednesday's Ames Tribune, the big story was about the city's Economic Development Commission and Alliant Energy, which are partnering to create a 730-acre industrial annex zone in the eastern part of the city. It's now mostly farmland, part of it stretching almost to the former Dow DuPont ethanol plant and the Nevada city limits. It's called Prairie View Industrial Center, and it would consist of five lots with about 310, 150, 114, 78, and 77 acres each. Prospective developers could build industrial properties on those lots. The sale price would be $25,000 an acre. Under the deal, the city would provide water and sewer services to the facilities as it builds out to the annexation area next year. Alliant Energy would provide updated electric and gas services. The utility company already serves customers in the area from the time it was unincorporated Story County. Ames City officials would still have the authority to grant or deny building permits, but the permitting process would be expedited if the Iowa Economic Development Authority designates the area as a so-called certified site. Prairie View would be the third industrial park project of its kind in Alliant Energy's portfolio in recent years. It's made similar deals to develop industrial parks in Cedar Rapids and Ottumwa. Ames Mayor Ann Campbell called the project the pinnacle of public-private partnership. She said, in her words, "It's an exciting new venture, and we're looking to make Ames and hopefully all of Iowa a better place." Also in Wednesday's Trib, a story about recent media disclosures about powerful men who allegedly or admittedly sexually assaulted or harassed women. Marcy Webb, a supervisor of the Sexual Abuse Assault Program at the Assault Care Center Extending Shelter and Support Program, told the Tribune that the national discussion that's now underway is important because, in her words, it's bringing a lot of the stuff that is actually very common into our conversation and giving voice to difficult topics that historically our society does not do a great job giving energy and voice to. She said, again, in her words, a lot of this happens in secrecy. A lot of really bad stuff happens in secrecy. Webb said that while sexual misconduct in Hollywood and politics gets a lot of media attention, sexual harassment occurs whenever people choose to do it and no one stops them. She said that she thinks Americans live in what she called a rape culture, where sexual violence is normalized and condoned. She said she believes people need to know that they are not alone, and that if they're choosing to try and get their voices heard, there are people who will support them. Some of those people work at Webb's program, which provides free services to sexual assault survivors in central Iowa. It can be reached at 515-292-0500. That number again, 515-292-0500. Wednesday Trib also reported that Ames Mayor Ann Campbell is looking for a volunteer to serve on the city's transit agency Board of Trustees. That person would fill the vacancy left by Mayor-elect John Hala. As an elected official, Hala can no longer serve on one of the city's boards or commissions. The board's main function is to oversee SkyRide and make sure the buses keep running on time. The deadline to apply for the open position, December 1st. Applicants have to live in Ames and would be expected to serve the rest of Hala's term through May 15, 2019. Applications are available at the Ames City Clerk's Office or online at cityofames.org. Meanwhile, John Hala will be sworn in as mayor January 2nd, along with re-elected council members Gloria Betcher and Amber Corrieri. David Martin, who won the Ward 3 council seat, will take his oath of office December 19th because he will be out of town for the regularly scheduled ceremony. And there was still more in Wednesday's Trib, including stories about this Thanksgiving holiday weekend. Local retailers were getting set for big crowds of shoppers on this Black Friday and the coming weekend. At the North Grand Mall in Ames, staff at Penney's department store had hired more than 24 seasonal workers for the holidays. And locally owned businesses were stocking up for the weekend, which has been labeled Small Business Saturday and Sunday. Most businesses on Main Street will be open at 9 a.m. tomorrow morning, and there will be several special events such as swag bag giveaways and Cy the Mascot and Santa Claus making appearances at various shops. The National Retail Federation estimates 164 million Americans are expected to shop on Black Friday and over the next few days. Meanwhile, Ames Police and the Story County Sheriff's Office are offering tips for travelers to ensure a safe holiday weekend. They say travelers should allow extra time to get where they need to be by leaving early and giving friends or family an estimated time of arrival. And don't forget to keep your cell phones charged. But at the same time, officials remind all of us that drivers are not allowed to be on their phones unless it's a hands-free device. And one more bit of advice, if you're going to be gone, tell your neighbors so they can be on the lookout for any suspicious activity around your place. In Thursday's Ames Tribune, Thanksgiving Day, the big story was about the Ames man who has many reasons to be thankful. Jeff Garretto said he was awakened by the sound of popping noises and found his bedroom filled with smoke. Fire had broken out somewhere in his home at 121 Kingsbury Avenue. He said he grabbed his cell phone, went to a window, kicked out the screen, and climbed out into the sub-freezing temperatures wearing only his boxer shorts. It took firefighters only a few minutes to get to his place, which is about one block south of East Lincoln Way. They put out the blaze, and Garretto was checked out and given a clean bill of health. Firefighters say they're looking at an electrical problem as a possible cause. Garretto, meanwhile, is thankful that he woke up in time to get out of that blaze. Also in Thursday's Tribune, word that First Christian Church in Ames was getting set to serve between 600 and 700 meals at the annual Food at First Thanksgiving gathering. The church's basement was buzzing on Wednesday as volunteers chopped vegetables, carved turkeys, and stacked pies. About 100 volunteers were expected to work for the meal service. They were cooking up a storm, 474 pounds of turkey, 250 pounds of potatoes, 12 gallons of gravy, and hundreds of pounds more of stuffing, cranberry sauce, and other food. They'd also be cooking ham, mashed potatoes, and more. Volunteers were also planning to deliver meals to community residents who were not able to get to church for dinner on Thanksgiving. Altogether, volunteers were expected to cook and give away about 1,000 pounds of food. About half of it was donated by the public, the other half was purchased with money from the community. Also in the Thanksgiving Day trip, word that students at Sawyer Elementary have spent the past few weeks getting a crash course in the history of Thanksgiving and investigating popular myths associated with the holiday. First grade teacher Jenya Coffey's students looked into what they called the Harvest Celebration of 1621, learning what life was like back then for the people we now call the Pilgrims. She found the kids knew very little about the first Thanksgiving or about Native Americans. Among the things they discovered, the food we now commonly associate with Thanksgiving were likely not at the first celebration, but venison and some kind of fowl, and perhaps eel, and beans, and corn, and squash were. And Thanksgiving was not officially recognized within the United States until 1863, when President Lincoln declared a national day of Thanksgiving. In this week's Nevada Journal, word that Nevada residents got a look at drawings and plans for the upcoming intersection widening project at Airport Road and Lincoln Way. What those drawings show is that Lincoln Highway will be widened at the Airport Road corner to include three lanes of westbound traffic, a left turn lane, a right turn lane, and a straight through lane. The project also includes a straight through lane and a right turn lane for eastbound traffic coming out of Nevada. The project is expected to take place next summer. 80% of the cost of the nearly $1.5 million project will be federally funded. The rest will be paid by the city. Also in the journal, a report on the Nevada School Board meeting, which focused on a discussion about the self-paced math program for students at the city's middle school. That program was started a couple of years ago. 90-minute classes are broken into teacher time, where students are all learning the grade equivalent standard on what a student should be working on, and a smaller amount of time known as online time, when students work on their individual needs. Teachers told the school board they've seen an increase in students' problem-solving on their own when they get an incorrect answer. In this week's Boone News Republican, a report on the Boone City Council meeting. Public hearings were held to consider the sale of properties at 1022 Lynn Avenue and 1627 5th Street. The land would be used for infill projects for new housing. Council members also discussed traffic issues on the side of the road by Quartz Avenue, the timing of long trains going through Boone, and gaps in railroad tracks. Union Pacific is working on the gaps and the timing of trains. And the council heard about the upcoming annual Shop with a Cop event, which will take place December 14th at the Boone County Fairgrounds. It will be the 15th year the police department has done the event, which involves about 100 youths who get to shop with about $120 to $150 to spend. Also in the News Republican, the Boone Moose Lodge 104 and the Boone Fairway Store are gathering donations for the 180 National Guard men and women who recently left Boone to train in Texas and who will be deployed to the Middle East next month. Donation boxes are at the Boone Moose Lodge at 812 8th Street and in the Fairway, where the public can buy a paper bag full of necessities for $20. That bag will be sent to the Guard's men and women. And donations are more than welcome. Items that can be donated include travel-sized baby powder, toothbrushes, toothpaste, floss, mouthwash, razors, shaving cream, deodorant, and reading material. Also in the News Republican, women in the First United Methodist Church's Mitten Knitters group are busy trying to help people stay warm this winter. They've been making scarves, hats, and mittens that will go to local organizations such as the Salvation Army, to elementary schools, and more. 13 women are in the group, and they have made more than 1,100 winter items. In this week's Story City Herald, Story City is lighting up its downtown in a new way this holiday season. This summer, the city's Greater Chamber Connection received a $75,000 grant from the County Board of Supervisors, which in part covered the cost of the new building. The grant required a 25% match of the $100,000 project, and the chamber raised the rest of the money. Much of the cost was for new lights downtown, the rest for new boulevard signs, bike racks, benches, and historical plaques. The lights will not be used just during the upcoming Yule Fest, but year-round. They will be lit up tonight during Story City's Yule Fest event. Also in this week's Herald, word that Volunteer Iowa has released nomination materials for next year's Excellence in Mentoring Awards. Nominations must be submitted online or postmarked by next January 16th. Honorees will be recognized during National Volunteer Week next April. The Excellence in Mentoring Awards honor individuals who have demonstrated a commitment to expanding quality mentoring relationships for young people in Iowa through service as a mentor to a young person. You can find details about all this and nomination materials online at volunteeriowa.org. And that's a look at the news this Thanksgiving week. And here's my wish for a happy Thanksgiving weekend to all of you.
That was the Local News Roundup with Dennis Hart, and you can hear that each Friday on Local Talk on KHOI. Sharp, who in 1962 released that song on an album called It's Mashed Potato Time, and there was a dance to go along with it. Mashed potatoes, that brings us back to talking about Thanksgiving and the food we might have enjoyed. Yesterday, I went to the community Thanksgiving dinner that Dennis mentioned, the one that was served at Food at First. They provided a wonderful homemade Thanksgiving feast to about 600 people at their location in Ames, and they also delivered over 100 meals to people who couldn't get there. After enjoying my delicious meal, I spoke with others who were enjoying the dinner, and also some who were volunteering. I was curious how long they had been coming, what they enjoyed about it, and what else they would do over Thanksgiving weekend. Here are some of the voices of volunteers and diners at the Thanksgiving dinner at Food at First in Ames.
I'm speaking with David, and David, I understand that you're a longtime volunteer at Food at First, and yet today you're here eating.
I used to be the every Wednesday head chef, and then I left town for just a little over a year and just returned a month ago, and I've already cooked once, and I'll probably do another couple within the next few weeks. Anything I can to be useful to Food at First. It's a great program. Yeah, it's my family. I'm feeding my friends.
But here today, you're not working. You're here as a recipient of this wonderful meal.
I got back to town too late to volunteer. The list was full, which is a great problem to have. This is like one of the few times during the year when we don't have enough volunteers. I mean, we have too many. usually it's the other case. And so, so the volunteer list was full. I just get to sit and eat pie and then go home and take a nap, and somebody else can do dishes today.
My name is Akalia Acevedo.
Tobias Acevedo. I'm usually just taking the trays and putting them in the kitchen to be washed.
And I've had the lucky job of passing out pie. Everybody loves pie, so we get to say Happy Thanksgiving, and we get lots of smiles for the pie.
And why did you decide to come today to do this?
Well, we just talked about seeing where there might be a need in Ames that we could serve since we are in town and aren't traveling, and we had heard about Food at First and decided that would be something we could do together to serve and help a need.
It has been really fun helping people and just making them happy.
Are you going to eat here, or are you going to go home and eat?
We're going to go home and eat, I think. Right?
Yep. I think we'll go home and eat. We thought about maybe sitting with some folks and talking if there was room or a need, but we do have some Thanksgiving food at home.
So did you cook a turkey and everything?
Yep, we've got turkey and our favorite ham balls.
I see that you're done eating. How was the meal?
Oh, it was delicious. I can't believe how much food you get when you come here. It's amazing.
And what was your favorite part of the meal?
Well, everybody always says dessert, but the whole meal. I mean, everything's homemade.
And is this the first time you've come here on Thanksgiving, or have you been here other years?
Have been here other years. We've come up from Des Moines, and we take my mom out, and she enjoys coming here, and it's a nice place to fellowship.
And one more question about Thanksgiving. Are you going to do any shopping?
Absolutely no. This is a day for family, and this is the way it should be.
And what about tomorrow?
No, I have to work. So I'm in retail, so I'm going to be down on the battlefield.
I'm from India. Coming from a different country, Thanksgiving was like a new thing for me, and I just love the fact that people just had a day here to thank people and just be grateful. And I thought I might as well help people. And this is just an amazing experience. Like, I'm really glad I chose to spend my day over here. In India, once again, I was really involved in community service. And when I came here, I wanted to find out how I could help the community here. Because it's always it's such an amazing experience when you're helping someone. So, yeah, this is my first time here, but I feel like this is going to be a regular spot for me to come and volunteer.
I was here in 2009, and well, it's kind of nice. I guess you don't have nowhere to go, you know, have some place to go, so that kind of helps, because I don't get to eat stuffing too often. So I like that. People might get tired of it, but I could probably eat that for a while and not get tired of it.
This is our fourth year. My brother, Chris, is the director of Food at First, so we've been coming since he's been here, and we love coming here. It's like gourmet food. Why would you cook? Plus, you have this great atmosphere.
What was your favorite part?
Mashed potatoes and gravy.
Yeah, that was good. And the turkey. That was really good, yeah.
Is this the first year you've come?
Yeah, with my dad. Yeah. But I think my dad has been here before.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, coming right here almost every year.
For about how many years?
Right here for 2 years, and the other ones I go last maybe 4 years.
Oh, so at their previous location you came too?
Yeah, the other one. Yes. I'm so glad place like that, because that one they can meet new people, and I'm so happy because the guys work hard for everybody having a good Thanksgiving.
I used to be a radio announcer at a Christian radio station, KJLY in Blue Earth, Minnesota. And the time is, I don't know, sometime around 12:45 currently right now. And the KJLY stood for Know Jesus Loves You.
Is this the first time you've come to Food at First?
No. Actually, I found it back in about 2010. And it has been an outstanding thing because when I went through the stock market crash in 2008, I was on the downside of life. I needed to be on the other side of the table receiving donations of food and meals. So this has been a wonderful thing in my life. I have taken home the sweet potato recipe in a way. When I first volunteered here back in 2011, it has the it's a butter with pecans and the sweet potatoes. I just love the combination that it was here. Simple, basic, and others like it too.
Been coming here for years.
And are you going to be doing any shopping this weekend?
No, I have to work.
How many years have you been coming here?
I've been about 3 years, 4 years now. Yeah, I really like the food. Everything is all, it's like nice to have friends here to talk to. Everything, the food was awesome. And I say the best thing would be for me was corn on the cob. I just love corn on the cob any time of the year.
Are you going to do some shopping this weekend?
Yep, they call me crazy because I'm going to be working I work at Kohl's, so I have to be there at 4:30. I'll be getting off at 3 o'clock in the morning, and I'm going to go shopping. And then I'll go back home and go to sleep, and then I have to go back to work again.
4:30 today you have to be at work?
Yes, I sure do. Some of the best deals right now is going out to at Kohl's and everywhere else, so best time to get them. If you're going to get out there, just go out there. And yeah, it's going to be crowded. You have to wait in lines, but it's worth it.
You've been dishing out ham with one hand and mashed potatoes with the other.
Right. They get as much as they want, so, and we have a lot of different things to choose from, with a green bean casserole and even tofurkey for vegetarians, and corn and lots of gravy. This is the first time we volunteered. I and my wife both volunteered this year help out. We wanted to find more volunteer opportunities and found it here.
You are Mr. Volunteer. I know that you volunteer at Habitat for Humanity and you volunteer here. What are you doing here today?
I'm doing the annual Thanksgiving dinner. We do it every year and we serve a lot of people. We cook about 70 turkeys, and we get about 80 pies, but we had 120 pies this year. And so that's what I do. Every year, we're here.
And what have you been doing in particular today? You've been getting people what they need?
Yeah, back there in the back, we have a to-go order, and then we also have, we deliver a lot of them. So we probably delivered about 125 today, and so somebody's got to be back there getting them bagged up and this, that, and the other. So that's what I've been doing. Not just me, there's been a whole crew.
Yeah, it's definitely a community effort to serve the community.
Yes, it is. Yesterday there was 300 pounds of potatoes peeled by families that come in, and that's the greatest thing about this whole thing is that families, little kids, 4 years old, you know, on up, you know, come in and volunteer all at once, and it's really a good thing for them, and it's a good tradition for the city of Ames.
Well, thank you very much, Rick, and thanks for all your work.
You're welcome. Thank you.
It took many volunteers who worked all week to prepare and serve that dinner at Food at First. It reminded me that we often don't think about the people who serve our community and have to work on holidays like Thanksgiving. One of our KHOI reporters wondered about the firefighters who have to be on duty even on holidays.
This is Cynthia McClure. I'm with Doug Allen, who is the shift commander, Fire Station 3. Here names.
Yeah, I'm a shift commander. I'm on duty with shift 2 today.
Big question is, and I'm asking everybody, what they're doing for Thanksgiving. So what is whether it's the Ames Fire Department or you personally, what are you doing for Thanksgiving, sir?
Well, due to our 24-hour schedule, working 24 hours on, 48 hours off, we're on duty on Thanksgiving. So we'll come to work at 7 o'clock in the morning Thanksgiving Day and go home 7 o'clock Friday morning. So kind of we're fully staffed and ready to respond, and we'll just do our Thanksgiving as if it's any other normal day. So
you'll be one of the people that if somebody calls and they have a Thanksgiving emergency, and this is kind of the south of Ames area, you'll be the guy to be there, or one of your crew?
One of the crew will be there. As a shift commander, I'm over in charge of all three stations, but so that we have crews at each station, and depending on the area of the call, that's who will show up. So, and depending on the type of call, I may show up as well. So, we never know.
This is a big day. So what's your favorite food for Thanksgiving? Because you're going to be working. So I'm assuming that you get to eat whatever you want with the crew.
Yeah, we'll send somebody to the store. We've looked online already, and there is a local grocery store that's open on Thanksgiving. So like we do every other day, we'll send somebody to the store and It's up to the crew. We might have turkey. I doubt it. We might have ham. We might grill something on the grill. So it's the flavor of the day for whatever the crew wants to have when we're here at the station. You never know here. We eat pretty good, and we have a lot of good cooks. And after we get our groceries, we just have a wide variety. Sometimes families will stop by on Thanksgiving, but I haven't heard any of the crews talking about that plan right now. So we usually celebrate with our families at a different time throughout the holiday weekend.
But you're going to have Black Friday off, and this is a personal day for you. So what are you going to do on Black Friday? Is it a big day for you?
It's a day for me to go home and rest up from being here on Thursday and avoid the crowds at the stores. I won't participate in Black Friday at all.
One of the things I've noticed is that this is a big family holiday. Do you find that to be true with yourself and your crews?
It is. It is a big family holiday. And the crews that do that, obviously, due to our job, we know going into it that we're, you know, if we have to work, we get to work. But we do, it is big on family. And as far as the crews, we're kind of like a family here. So it's a pretty laid back schedule on a holiday like that. So they might watch a movie but there's not a lot of, structured activity for them just to respond to the emergency events as they happen throughout the city. But family's big. Mm-hmm. And that's why I say we do allow families to come to the station. So you'll see a group of family, you know, somebody's family will come in and they'll spend some time with them unless they have to go on a call. But family's big, yes.
Well, that's a very sincere thing to say. So if people were listening and they wanted to stop by the fire department and bring some food, would you be averse to that?
Our preference is that if you would like to make a donation of something like that, that you do it to an organization in town where there's a stronger need for the people to have food. We're pretty well taken care of. I mean, we buy our own groceries and stuff while we're at the station, but we really do prefer that people think about us, stop by and say hi, and then take the goodies to the homeless shelter or whatever organization in town. So that's our preference. We like to have you stop and say hi, but if you got something to donate, give it to a group that we feel is more deserving of that.
Thank you, Doug. Appreciate your time and the service that you guys give during this, this time of being thankful.
Thanks for thinking about us this holiday season.
I also spent some time this week asking people about their Thanksgiving traditions. One of the people I spoke with was Hilda McCorry, who is a doctoral student at ISU in the School of Education. And Hilda is from Kenya, and she has lived in the U.S. for only about 4 years.
When you hear someone talk about Thanksgiving or you think of Thanksgiving, do you think of the story of how Thanksgiving originated, or what do you think of?
I think of families coming together and sharing a meal, which is the turkey. But I sometimes think of the origin of the story, but initially the first thought of Thanksgiving is families and food.
And when you say you also think of the origin of the story of Thanksgiving, what do you think of?
I think of how Thanksgiving has transformed and changed over time, according to me, because from the story, it was strangers being welcomed into this land and sharing that meal. And that idea has been lost from the Thanksgiving event. So when I think about it, it makes me sad that initial idea is gone, because in the process of celebrating, we need to include the original piece of why are we doing this? Who are we celebrating? And who welcomed these people? Like, include all the parts of the origin of the story, and then we will be like, it's Thanksgiving. It's not about just one part of the story.
So you're saying that we've kind of lost several things. Several things have kind of gotten lost over the years. One would be that Thanksgiving is supposed to be about giving thanks. You think that's been lost?
Yes, because when I think of 2015 Thanksgiving, I was with my adopted grandmother. Then I was expecting we sit down, talk about what we are thankful for, but really what we do is come together, talk and eat and then leave. I see that piece again lost. I've been to 3 families, and then I don't understand what are we thankful of. That we don't even go ahead to say we're thankful we're here, we got to see each other, we are alive, or we are doing this, this is what we've done in our lives, and we are thankful for whatever, anything you think you're thankful about. So that piece, again, I feel like it's not there. What are we thankful of in this season?
You were thinking that people would come together, eat, but that there would be some kind of ritual or some kind of actual giving thanks that was a meaningful part of the gathering and of the dinner, and that didn't happen, and that surprised you.
Yes, it did.
People probably went off and watched football, because that's another big thing that people do on Thanksgiving here in the United States. Have you noticed that?
Yes, I've noticed that. It's a quick meal. You come when the meal is ready, you eat, you talk during the meal or a few minutes after the meal, then you may play games or do something else, but then it will be like, okay, we are leaving now, you go do other things, but part of it watching football and maybe shopping ready for Black Friday. So it beats some logic of, really, the question is, what are we being thankful of?
Right, and that's kind of gotten lost. Because now people, some stores even open late on Thanksgiving. So people can leave their Thanksgiving dinner and gathering and start their shopping even on Thanksgiving afternoon and evening. Going back to what you said originally, I think I also heard you saying that the other part of the story that's been lost, like the first Thanksgiving story that's been lost, has to do with the perspective of Native American people?
Yes. From that original story, the Europeans were welcomed into the United States by the Native people. That celebration, we miss that part of the Native people. We were welcomed by these people. I think it's another time to celebrate those people who welcomed us into their land instead of forgetting that that was the origin of Thanksgiving. So I feel like we should have to remind ourselves, why are we celebrating? It's because these people happen to be our hosts when we arrived here. And they welcomed us, and we shared this kind of meal. It was a turkey, and we were like, we are thankful we have arrived. And the hosts were like, welcome here, and let's be thankful for your presence and for our presence.
And even that story kind of frames or shows the Native Americans as actually being glad that the Europeans were here, and we know that that isn't really a realistic telling of that story.
It's what the mainstream society disseminates that we get. And sometimes the truth is lost from generation to generation, so I think the Native people, they could have their version of Thanksgiving. So if we think of them and what we do, then we could get what's missing. This is their side of the story, and this is our side of the story. And then we could know what's missing or what really happened. So again, many of the stories in history, some of them that are ugly, that are not good, usually they don't end up to be the original stories. So probably still some of that story is not really all of it that we know.
You grew up in Kenya. And are there holidays or any ways that people would associate with giving thanks that you remember from Kenya?
I remember when I was growing up, we had harvest days when people could come together and share their harvests. But it usually was like a continuous process, and we always came together and shared as families, but it wasn't a big occasion as far as I remember. But there are moments or occasions where there's a Thanksgiving celebrations. And moving away from the cultural practices, there's also the religious Thanksgiving.
So there's a religious association with Thanksgiving there?
Yeah, but not like the American one. It's like the Catholic way. The week of giving thanks, then you take your harvest and offerings to the church. So during harvest, especially corn, it's usually one season, and now everyone takes that to church and to share. So it's those times when things are ready for harvest, especially farm crops, that's when you take to church to share and for blessings.
And that idea of sharing, it seems like it's an important one. You told a story about how people share the first milk that comes from a cow when it starts giving milk.
So this is when the first few weeks after calving, the milk is usually yellow because it's thick with the protein. So that one you can't sell it, and you can't, because you have a lot of milk at that time, you cannot sell the milk. Usually it's preserved for families and neighbors. So every time your cow gives calves or gives birth to a new calf, you preserve that milk, ferment it, and share it with, you make a gourd, you share it with your families and friends. Like every family house that's regarded that this is our home, you have to give milk to them until you're done. That's when you're able to sell, to start using your milk by yourself or selling it.
And if you don't do that and share with your neighbors, what happens?
There's a belief. It's just a belief that your cow may get sick, or the person you didn't give will have a grudge towards you, and that's not good for your cow. So it's just a belief that it's not a good practice towards wellness of the society and their animals.
And what is it like, this fermented milk that you share with your neighbors?
It's like thick yogurt with curd, but usually it's not so thick, it's separated. The curd is separate from the liquid or like the water part of milk. Yep. And you can make it here even with the whole milk in America.
And you make it?
I do, and I like it.
Prince, your son, now is still young and not in school and so on. But you've been thinking about what it will be like in terms of American holidays that he has not yet learned about.
Yeah, it's because for me, some holidays are not meaningful, or I don't pay much attention to those holidays. Like you asked me earlier that if I've made a turkey, I've not, and it's because I really don't care about it. So I'm thinking when my child grows up and they will be talking about Thanksgiving when they go back to school, they will be talking about how they helped make turkey, and then my son will be like, no, we didn't do that. We don't do that in our house. So I feel like it may feel isolated in a way, or alienated in terms of things that I practice that are going to put him out there as an isolated student or kid. So I'm still thinking, I'm in that loop where I'm like, when should I start doing it, or should I start practicing these American things or like holidays or things they do for that holiday? So I'm in between. Yeah, when you have that culture dilemma, when you don't know what you should do, should you stick to what you know or what you've been doing? But then you have someone else who is going to be different from you. Are you going to think about them, and how is that transition? It's what I believe in. I've not been celebrating Thanksgiving. To some people it's meaningful. To me it's meaningless. So when it reaches that point of contestation, now to my son it's going to be meaningful. And how meaningful it's going to be if it's meaningless to me. So I'm in between of to lose my identity of not be like, this is not who I am, we don't do this, and teaching my son, who is now American, that this is what people do here. Or should I just go on and telling this is meaningless? But I understand it's not going to be meaningless to him. So that's the point, I mean, the point of identity crisis.
Is there a holiday that you used or a tradition that you used to celebrate in Kenya that's not possible to celebrate here that you regret having to give up?
I can't cite a specific holiday, but there are practices, I could say. And these are like daily practices, things you do in your day life and things that happen in the neighborhood because of the shared common things that you do. Mm-hmm. So those are things that I'm losing one by one, little by little. But I'm not going to say there's a specific holiday to that.
Anything else that Thanksgiving makes you think of?
I only think of the native people. I wonder what they do during Thanksgiving.
That was Hilda Mukorai, a graduate student at ISU from Kenya. She had some interesting perspectives on this holiday we call Thanksgiving. This is a holiday at which we might ask, as Hilda did, what do Native Americans think of it? In this segment, Native Americans were asked what the word Thanksgiving means to them.
Thanksgiving.
Lies.
Sadness. Total sadness. Thanksgiving is a time when my family gets together and tells stories about our creation myths and who we were and who we are and really what we lost.
Inaccurate. I like the overall idea of Thanksgiving, but not where it actually comes from.
Turkey and white pilgrims. I don't know what the first Thanksgiving was, but I highly doubt it was a group of happy pilgrims and a group of happy Indians cooking turkey together.
Family.
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 Watch football, overeat.
Warm.
A celebration.
Thankful.
I don't really celebrate the holiday for like what it actually is, more of like just getting to have family over and eat.
Colonization. I think it is important to give thanks and to have a day for that. But maybe the history of why we celebrated it in that certain way is more complicated.
Oh, that's a horror. Horror beyond measure. Terrible, brutal, atrocity, massacre.
There was a massacre. Puritans came and slaughtered them. They didn't want to eat with the savage. They slaughtered millions of us. I don't know why they called themselves Puritans.
Romanticized? Well, I would definitely say the story of Thanksgiving and coming together is definitely romanticized because of the horrible atrocities that were committed against us.
Thanksgiving, just to me, just means a day for football and lots of good eating and trying not to think about what it really represents.
People may not remember that in 2009, President Barack Obama signed a resolution designating the Friday after Thanksgiving as Native American Heritage Day. The resolution had unanimous support in the U.S. House of Representatives and Senate. In signing the resolution, President Obama stated, "I encourage every American to join me in observing Native American Heritage Day. It is also important for all of us to understand the rich culture, tradition, and history of Native Americans and their status today, and to appreciate the contributions that first Americans have made and will continue to make in our nation." So far, that is one proclamation that the current president has not yet overturned. And it gives us something to think about on this day after Thanksgiving. In Massachusetts, it was the Wampanoag tribe who were the first Native Americans to encounter the Pilgrims nearly four centuries ago. They are said to have joined the Pilgrims in 1621 for what came to be known as the first Thanksgiving meal. But the meal was far from the idyllic story of unity often told to elementary children in school. In the years preceding it, the outbreak of disease brought by European traders had killed two-thirds of the Wampanoag. And in the following years, Wampanoag lands were seized by the settlers and laws were put in place to prevent the use of their language.
the last speaker of their native language, died about 170 years ago. However, members of the Wampanoag tribe have been working to revive their native language. Using written records and the assistance of linguists, they've been able to reconstruct their language and are once again seeking to raise a new generation of native speakers. They recently started a native language preschool, and their language is now offered in the local high school. A few years back, around Thanksgiving, Greta Anderson, a local talk reporter at that time, did a very interesting interview with Jane Mount Pleasant about Native American agricultural practices and their relationship with the European colonizers. In this segment, Greta spoke with Jane Mount Pleasant about the Three Sisters intercropping system of growing winter squash, maize or corn, and climbing beans, growing them all together.
We are taught that the Native Americans taught the colonists how to plant, how to farm in this culture, but some kind of mistranslation occurred, it seems. Did colonists originally, do we know whether the original colonists tried this Three Sisters intercropping type of system or whether they were so kind of accustomed to the rational monoculture concept?
Well, there is plenty of evidence to indicate that they observed what Native peoples were doing. The indications are that what they first tried to do was to plant their small grains that they brought from England with them onto unplowed ground because they didn't have plows and they didn't have draft animals either. So they first tried the small grains like wheat and barley and had complete crop failure. So then they began looking at the corn and asking for some help and, well, how do we plant this? Now, whether they immediately started with the Three Sisters, I don't know. It wouldn't surprise me that they did. They might have observed what the Narragansetts and other of the Native peoples were doing and followed suit. But we do know almost immediately they began to receive plows, and they were very, very uncomfortable with planting what we today would call no-till. And so they immediately began to plow their fields. And so initially they did very well. Crops did fine, but as happened all over Europe and every other place that's used to plow agriculture, within a couple of decades their fields began to experience dramatic declines. And that accounts for the huge pressure to take native land. They wanted to move west continuously, and it was not long before they were over in New York State trying to get Iroquois land, and that's one of the major reasons for the Revolutionary War, is the desire to get onto the more fertile lands of New York. We have a band of very productive alfalfas that run from Albany to Buffalo. There was great pressure to get those. They did eventually get them after the Revolutionary War period, and within 30 to 40 years, they had almost completely worn out those soils. And it was not until, again, the late 1800s that people discovered that you can't just plow and plow and plow and not rotate your crops, not add animal manure, not do something to replenish the soil or organic matter. And so once again, we see the destruction of actually really good soils in central New York that the Iroquois had farmed for centuries were basically worn out within a space of about 40 years, exactly what happened in Europe. So, the Iroquois and other Native peoples, you know, shared a lot of information and knowledge, but most of the problem had to do with the desire to plant with plows. And of course the desire for wheat. Nobody wanted corn. They only planted corn to initially feed their animals and to ensure the survival of their own families. But wheat was the crop that all of the colonists wanted because it was such an important trade good. It was what would get cash, and so they could participate in the trade economy and get money.
Jane Mount Pleasant, thank you so much for spending some time and opening up this interesting perspective on agriculture and Native American agriculture practices in particular.
That was Greta Anderson speaking with Jane Mount Pleasant. And that was from our archives from a past show. It makes us think about that complicated relationship between the Native Americans and the European colonizers, particularly at this time of year when we celebrate the Pilgrims and the myth of the first Thanksgiving. This is KHOI Community Radio, and you've been listening to Local Talk. I've been your host, Gail Seiler. Thanks to Dennis Hart, Greta Anderson, and Cynthia McClure for their segments. Local Talk is broadcast on KHOI at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can also listen to today's Local Talk show and all of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. We also heard Mashed Potato by D.D. Sharp. KHOI's membership drive is just wrapping up, so it's a good time to become a member of KHOI. And remember, Tuesday is Giving Tuesday. You can go to our website, khoifm.org, and look for the donate button. Or you can call 515-292-2878 or come by the station and join in person. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as audience and supporter is what makes KHOI possible and meaningful. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.
Funding for KHOI Radio is provided in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. We encourage you to shop local this holiday season. You can support Ames' growth while enjoying the wide array of local shopping and dining experiences that Ames independent businesses offer. From the Ames Chamber of Commerce, happy holidays. Let's shop local and grow Ames.